Very fine, HF.
Okay, we're going to begin the tech net. I'm KQ Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. You'll also hear a couple of other guys. John KC2WGB, Paul WS2N, and Hal K6DPZ. One, two, three, four guys. I think they run this show where the clan gets together most Sunday evenings and we discuss our favorite subject, ham radio, and how to get more enjoyment out of it, how to make all this hardware work, and how does it work. Those transmission lines, my goodness. I looked at some of the past records, and probably the most discussed single subject over the 30 years of the technical net has been some form of standing wave ratio, the measurement, the correction, and whatever. And you guys might get a kick out of the fact that the real serious microwavers, let me drop the Dr. Tom Williams microwave list, the BA1MBA, Whiskey Alpha 1, Mike Bravo Alpha, .org. You go to that website, and you'll see his microwave list where there's about 350 guys, something in that order, around the world who use the frequencies generally above 1,000 megacycles. And there's a great big discussion on the standing wave ratio in their world as to what happens to the standing wave ratio you sense on your feed horn when you carefully adjust the feed horn, whether it be linear polarized or circular polarized, aimed at cold sky. You carefully tune it so it's a pure 50-ohm resistor at your favorite frequency. Then you put it in front of a parabolic dish antenna to feed the antenna, and some of that signal goes down to the center of the dish, reflects back to the horn, and creates standing wave ratio. And at first you'd say, hey, standing wave ratio is not big, 1.6 to 1 or so. However, you've got a very carefully tuned low noise amplifier, which wants to see exactly 50 ohms, and when it sees anything else, the noise figure degrades considerably. Life gets complicated after that. How do you stop that reflection off the dish without creating another source of noise? You can't just absorb it, you know what I mean? Just to give you an example, so standing wave ratio among the really serious guys who study it is still a problem. It's a problem with us too. As you know, John is doing an experiment that's going to take another couple of weeks, I believe. He's gathering the equipment. Let me drop. John, KC2WGB, is gathering the equipment and running a set of experiments to confirm or deny that when you change the length of the transmission line and a pure 50-ohm shielded resistor at the far end, make it a 25-ohm resistor, where it's a pure 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. Various people believe that there's a magic length of cable which will lessen the standing wave ratio. And there are other people, and I'm in the second group, who say that no, that does not take place. And as you know, one good experiment is better than 1,000 theories. So John's in the process of confirming that. We'll eventually hear the results of that. And I guarantee that even when John derives those results, that's not going to be the end of the issue. Various people will say, hey, John, did you do this? Did you do that? How do you know that you didn't make a mistake? So it'll take a while before the smoke clears, but it's something to look forward to. We'll get a little bit closer to the bottom, assuming there is a bottom. What you're listening to is TechNet number 1462 of the series that began in September of 1982, 30 and a fraction years ago. As such, when people sign into the TechNet, you only need to sign in if you've got a real question or a comment for the net. You need not to sign in because you're listening. We don't need a great big long list of people saying they're listening. After 30 years, we believe somebody is listening. Let me drop. And the TechNet is an evolving thing. In the very beginning, way back in 1982, it was 1 hour long. We assumed we'd gather a few Sundays, answer people's questions, dry up, and go away. We soon discovered there was an extreme thirst for real knowledge as to how wireless equipment works. The schools appear to do a fairly poor job of presenting that information in useful engineering form, where somebody can go out of that room whistling that tune, if you know what I mean. So there's a lot of improvement that can take place there, particularly the subject of antennas. I mean, and that's really crazy by my standards. You can have a gold-plated transmitter, a silver-plated receiver, everything is perfect, $1 zillion worth. If you don't connect it to a good antenna, you've got nothing. And yet, antenna design is essentially not taught in our schools. Wild. So, you really want to know antenna engineering and wireless engineering, you got to hire a ham radio operator. So, what has evolved over the years is the menu that we've come up with to run the TechNet. It's such that now that it's a four-hour thing, starting at 8 o'clock and running until 12 o'clock, midnight. And by the way, the report that you get with the Landmark logo on it says that it begins at 8 o'clock p.m. and ends at 8 o'clock p.m., and it said that for about a year. Everybody I talk to says that cannot be corrected. I wonder how many more years it'll go on before it gets corrected. Okay, so the menu is that for the first hour, we take questions and give people an attempt at a brief answer. My answers are usually long-winded. Al tries to teach me what a brief answer should sound like. Al is K60BZ. After the first hour of questions and answers, for those people who sign in during the first hour, we then go to the mailbag where John receives emails, snail mails, and whatever, carrier pigeon messages from the guys who don't yet have their ham license, don't yet have the equipment by which they can talk to us directly. The main purpose of the TechNet is a live give and take on the spot. The group of four people that you've heard about that run this thing, let me drop. This group of people are not promising that you're going to get free consulting written answers during the rest of the week. The 4 hours we put in on Sunday night we think is already beyond the call of duty, if you know what I mean. So don't expect you're going to get answers during the rest of the week. A few cases are exceptions of people that we feel sorry for because they don't yet have the ham license. Brand new guys, we like to do a little bit of evangelizing for ham radio. But other than that, no promise. If you really want an answer to your question, bring it to this particular group on a Sunday night. What this group tries to do is to tap into the fantastic amount of brain power that exists in the tri-state area around New York. This repeater has moderately good coverage of northern New Jersey, southern New York State, most of Long Island, and western Connecticut. That combined with the IRLP and Echolink connections, we bring in people from many other places, like Canada, for instance. So with that vast amount of brain power, hopefully most of the questions that get asked has somebody out there who has some experience in that area. He chimes in, gives us the benefit of his past experience, and we all get a little bit smarter. Bear in mind, there's no guarantee that everything you're going to hear the first time on the TechNet is going to be accurate. Let me drop. It's very similar to the real world of engineering. If you are a realistic, real electronic engineer, for instance, you're going to have to eventually admit to yourself, if you're going to be truthful, that you're never going to bat a thousand. Nobody does. Not everything you say and do, no matter how sincere you are, is always going to be right. You're going to have a certain batting average. If you're real good, maybe 95% of your pronouncements and writings are going to be accurate. But a certain percentage are not going to be. By way of the website by which a very enthusiastic guy named Mike Perry, KTQNJI, records every one of the TechNets for the last 6.5 years. You go to his website, which is www.amateurradio.tangovictor. Amateurradio.tangovictor. The last 6.5 years of TechNets are there. And you choose the right year, the right month, the right week, the right Sunday, and the right reels. They come in 1 hour reels, and you can listen to that material. People do that when they find errors. They bring it to our attention, and we bring it to you, the fact that, hey, what you heard last week on that particular subject of standing wave ratio, well, there's later information. So we try to correct those things, if you know what I mean. We drop. So as I was starting to say, the first hour is the brief questions and answers, followed by John's mailbag, KC2WGB, for the people who write to him by snail mail, emails, or whatever. We take two, three, four of those questions. After that, we get into the more serious information, where some people don't like getting into the really serious stuff. And if you don't like that, don't tune in that time. Be forewarned that beyond, let me say, 10 o'clock, we're going to get into deeper subjects. And if you don't like that, there's 800 channels on your 2-meter radio. You can tune to one of the others. If the TechNet didn't exist, between 10 o'clock and midnight, the machine would be empty. I mean, it would be silent. Would you rather have silence than some kind of information?
Repeater, timeout.
A more realistic person will realize that there's a better way of doing it than just trying to control everything, if you know what I mean. Okay, we're going to check check-ins right now for people who do have a question or a comment for the net. And we have a piece of information, by the way. If you do hear sounds you think shouldn't be there, we'd like to hear your report, not on the air. We'd like to hear it by way of the website. You go to RFI, Radio Frequency Interference, at LIMARC.org. Radio Frequency Interference at LIMARC.org, and tell us what you heard and how loud was it at your QTH. Use the reverse button on your rig, and you might have to go to the sideband mode if your rig is an all-mode rig to listen to a weaker signal. But tell us at what time you heard what signal strength. If you've got an aimable antenna, try to tell us what direction it comes from. By way of those reports, we'll eventually try to convince that person that what he's doing is not really for his benefit or anyone else's benefit. It's a very, very troubled person, apparently, who is doing jamming from time to time. Okay, give me your call letters and name right now. A typical sign-in will sound like this. WA2PJF, Vito, and yes. KQRIW listening. Do we have any check-in?
K2TGW, less, yes.
W2BMP, yes. AC2WBD, yes.
Okay, the last two guys didn't give me a name. Les gave me his name. The second guy was W2 Baker Mike Papa. Please give me your name, sir.
W2BMP Joe.
Very fine, Joe. And I think the next guy was Kilo Charlie 2 Whiskey Delta Bravo question mark. Please give me your name and correct me.
The Kilo Charlie 2 Whiskey Bravo Delta. You got Tony over here in Bayshore, our first time user on a Weimar channel.
Very fine, Tony and Bayshore, we'll be getting to you. So we got three guys so far checking in. Anyone else, please give me your call letters and name. K2R, if you got a question or a comment. K2R, I'll be listening.
K2MVR, Joe, yes.
K2XGNF, the pool.
WS2N, call with this space report.
Okay, we got Joe, Wes, and Paul. Oh boy, you sound nice and loud. Oh boy, that repeater out there is happy to hear from you. Okay, we got more than enough to get going. And so, the very first guy who signed in was, I can't even read my writing. Les White. Terrible. Les, I think, is one of the founders of Weimar. K2, Tango Golf Whiskey. Les, what would you like to talk about tonight? K2LIW.
Question I think I know the answer, since it's not going to be changing much what I have. I have the patiner coming, and I have on the side of the south side of the house, underneath the second floor window, a multi-band fan dipole. I'm going to get him to put it up at the apex of the house, and we'll have it slant down over the sides of the house so nobody can see it as an extra antenna. If I band them together, it shouldn't make any difference, right? It will be a 6, 10, 20, 40 meter fan dipole. Back to you, K2TGW.
You did say band them together, and you're going to have to give me a couple of words on what that means, Les. Band them together. I know you're going to be taking this fan dipole, laying it over the top of the house at the apex, and band them together. Now, normally at the center feed point of a fan dipole, where you put the transmission line and balancing device, it's not going to catch on fire, and it's not going to stop working without the balun, but you get a lot more pure operation if you do put a baluning device at the center. And then from there, they usually fan out the individual dipoles, where at the tips of the dipoles, they are, let me pick a number, a foot, 2, 3 feet apart. If the individual pieces of wire were truly parallel, where, you know, there's a 16th of inch of separation along the whole length of all of the dipoles of all of the individual bands, that wouldn't be so good. It can be done. Like, for instance, there was a guy who decided to pull a fan dipole out of the ribbon lead that's used for, let me drop it. The ribbon lead that's used for a rotator. And so he cut various little pieces of the ribbon lead so that they were really parallel to each other, but he cut them just right to make a fan dipole in 4 or 5 bands. You can make it work, but when the individual leads are that close to each other, the capacitive loading of the higher bands lying adjacent to the dipoles of the lower band adds a lot of capacitance to those dipoles, to the higher frequency dipoles, and a lot of retuning is going to take place. If you're willing to spend the time to do the retuning, you can have them very close to each other, and yes, you can electronically make it work, but it could be a bit of a headache at the beginning. I may have misunderstood you, Les, so I'm back to you on that one. K2TGW, K2RIW in the TechNet.
No, you did not misunderstand me. That is the way they are now, and the 6 feet, of course, is separated from the other three, but I don't seem to have a problem now. That's why I was wondering if they're going to become an inverted V, and they will be close together. I most likely have some kind of U-type screws put in the side of the house or in the molding on the side, and just wire them all through. Or each end, we'll have to space them so that it's not in the wrong place. But that's what will happen, and that is what has happened now. And I have not had a problem. Yes, they do go through a balance. Back to you, Dick.
So if I understand you correctly, the 6 meter is separate, but the others are all very close together. And maybe they are or are not laying over the top of your house. The new arrangement is going to be on top of the house as a quasi-invisible antenna. And I'm not sure you've got to do that, because we amateurs, when we visit another ham, we look up in the air and we see wire. We go and our eyes are very sharp and we look for that. The rest of the public does not see wire. And so do you really have to do that to make it that invisible? Maybe the answer is no. But your current fan dipole, or if I understand correctly, they're all banded together. It either is or isn't on top of the house the way you're about to put it. Maybe just putting on new shingles or whatever. Is the current dipole mounted some way, the fan dipole mounted differently, Les? K2TGW, K2RIW in the second end.
No, it's not laying on the side of the house. It's spread east-west and it's tied off on each end. In this case, it's going to be follow the gable of the house down, starting at the apex of the gable and, you know, the different lengths up to whatever 40 meters is, although I could most likely make another longer one since the house is 35 feet high at that point. But that's, they're going to be laying against the side of the house, not on top of it, you know an inch away through some kind of eyeball.
Yeah, I sense that there's possibly two separate questions you're asking here, Les. One is, I think that it's not an inverted V right now, and it's about to become an inverted V, and that one's quite friendly. By that I mean, any individual dipole, that when you see the diagram in the book where it shows it out flat, parallel to the ground, up nice and high, and we think that's the only way to use a dipole. And as you start putting a V on the dipole where you raise the center and lower the tips quite a bit, you can go ridiculously tight with that apex angle before anything bad happens. 90 degrees, for instance, at the apex angle is a very minor difference in the electrical length of the dipole, where it might tune itself a little bit higher, a little bit lower. In your particular case, where it's going to be very close to the hardware of the house, the siding, the shingles, the insulation, the 2x4s, and the hardware and whatever inside the house can be dropped. There's a good possibility that the dielectric constant and other effects of the house itself and the other internal hardware will make some difference. You may have to retune some of those dipoles. You'll find out real fast by tuning across the band, plotting the standing wave ratio, and if it's the best of all worlds, it's going to be a U-shaped curve, a bathtub-shaped curve, where at the center of the band of your interest, it's going to be the bottom of the bathtub, and it's going to be a 1.2 Viz warrant, you know what I mean? And if the bottom of the bathtub ends up high or low, telling you that the dipole is too short or too long electronically, you know which way to readjust it. Another thing you're going to run into is that when it's that close to the internal structure of the house, you are going to be coupling RF energy into the wiring, the plumbing, and the controls for the air conditioning in the attic and things like this. You probably will occasionally see some electromagnetic interference on other appliances in the house when you're on certain frequencies of certain bands. You are going to be coupling into that hardware. But you know how to handle that, and you know how to test for that. so I know you can handle it. But is it your neighbors or the wife or the local zoning board that's making you go quite as drastic as you are to hide the antenna? I'm curious about that one now, Wes. Les. K2TGW. K2RIW in the TechNet.
I have no zoning problems. I have no real neighborly problems. But on the north side and the back of the house, there has to be, I don't know, 8 or 9 antennas, or antennae, as the case may be. This is on the opposite side. My wife is, in her benevolent wisdom and my age, I don't really feel like running up here to the second floor where my shack is. I have another rig downstairs. Put an antenna outside. But if it's going to be any kind of complications, I will just tie it off and it'll be an inverted V, but it won't be up against the house. Okay. I had second thoughts. That's why I raised the question. But all right. I don't have to have that kind of problem. I could just tie it off to some trees on the side. All right. Thank you, Dick. You've answered all my questions and alleviated some of the extra pain of having to have the painter put it up more than once. Thank you, Dick. K2TGW, be clear.
I'm pretty sure, Les, you'll be able to make it work. However, with the peak of your house 30 feet up, which is not a large number of wavelengths on the lower band, every bit of altitude helps. If your trees are higher than the house, I would try to use the trees. Because as the number of wavelengths of the antenna starts becoming small, at the apex, that's where it really counts, the peak of the inverted V, you're going to have a nevus phenomenon with a near vertical incident skyways. In other words, you'll be squirting most of the RF energy straight up, and you'll get slightly more severe skip zones, and DX out to the horizon, longer range, is going to be much more difficult with a nevus antenna as opposed to one of a higher altitude. However, we amateurs never have enough antenna. Maybe the right answer, what less, is to do both. Put the antenna, put the hidden antenna on the house, put another one up in the trees for the higher altitude, and from time to time when you flip the switch in the shack and compare the performance between the two, there are certain days when one of those antennas is going to work better than the other, and it's going to change. That ionosphere is always moving, and that ionosphere is always slowly shifting in polarization. You launch a horizontal signal into the ionosphere today on this hour, and an hour later it's going to be twisted and end up vertical to the guy you're talking into Europe, so to speak. Alrighty, we're going to go over to Joe next. W2, Baker Mike Papa. What would you like to discuss tonight, Joe? K2RIW in the TechNet.
Good evening, Dick. A couple of weeks ago, I attended some information on the Baofeng UV5 and the MICLOR website, and I had also had some information that the new Baofeng BF-F8+ was really designed specifically for ham radio. I was wondering if anybody had any follow-up information on that unit or had any more information. I'm not sure that information that I gave was accurate. I do have a BF-F8+. I'm not seeing any difference between that and the UV5. I was just wondering if anybody had any more information.
Now, from what I can tell, the people who bought the Baofengs, let me pick a number, a year and a half ago or earlier, when they went to narrow and wide mode by way of a commanding function, they truly got narrow and wide mode. For the last year or so, the majority of the Baofengs, like the 5, I can't think of the whole number, but it starts with a 5V, 5VR or something like that. Almost all of those are really intended for industrial application, which really means that they are now so-called narrow mode. When it says wide, it's only 2.5 kc of deviation instead of 5, which we'd like to hear. And when it goes narrow, it's down to 1.25 kc of deviation. So they tend to be very low in audio. And so where you're now reconfirming your measurement of BF-F8+, which we thought would be ham radio oriented, therefore, in the wide mode, it was truly set for 5 or so kc of deviation and would sound a normal volume on an FM receiver. We believe that, from what you were telling us last week, that that particular one corrected the problem. If I understand what you seem to be saying now, you think there is no difference in the deviation between the more modern bow forms versus the BF-F8. So run that by again. Has an independent measurer, as a person with a tuned ear, so to speak, listen to those two reeks when you make a transmission, Joe, and confirm that they are both the same audio volume when you talk into them, or is one louder than the other? So run that by again. Whiskey 2, Baker Mike Papa, KQLIW, the TechNet.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. I have an early UV5, I have a late UV5, and I have a brand new BF F8+. The early UV5 has much higher volume from what I'm told. Actually, I have measured it myself when my wife uses it. And the late UV5, so the most recent one, and the BF F8 seem to have much lower volume than the earlier transceivers do.
My goodness, that's disappointing, Lou. I mean, Joe, we were hoping the BF-F8 would be the louder one. Right now, I'm beginning to think that the UV3, Uncle Victor 3, which was most recently purchased by Dave and 2APG, we know that it has full volume. I hope the most recent issue of the UV3 still has full volume. I'm a little worried that now maybe it also has switched over to the new commercial bandwidth, because the Don FCC thinks it's going to squeeze a whole lot more people in the same spectrum by using more narrow modulation. It is my belief that this is a naive move on their part. I don't think it's going to work anywhere near as successful as they think. And if you understand the way modulation index of an FM modulated signal operates, you truly get less amplitude in the audio sideband, less real power of the audio is really being transmitted when you use more and more narrow FM. So you suffer a definite disadvantage, and so what you think on paper naively is an advantage really is a disadvantage. So I wonder if anyone out there has bought a recent Uncle Victor 3 cell phone. I hope they are still full bandwidth. It's beginning to look like all of the UV5 and BF-F8 Plus series are these narrowband ones that are not so desirable. And fixing that is not as easy as you'd like. Anybody with any further words on this, give me your call letters right now. K2LIW and the TechNet. I think if anyone later on signs in and has information about is the UV3 still full bandwidth? It looks like all the other Baofengs that we get a hold of. The good news about the Baofeng is they're like $38 plus tax and shipping. I mean, in sheer price, boy, they give you a lot of rig for the money. And correcting it, I'd like to believe somebody's going to come up with the correct method of correcting it. In other words, at the real radio integrated circuit that's in there, the main control radio circuit, I'd like to believe there's a way we can command it to wider bandwidth. I hope it's not just a being burned at the factory, if you know what I mean, with a particular bandwidth. For those who have made modifications to the microphone and the audio amplification after the microphone, I'm not convinced that that's the ideal solution, because all real FM transmitters have a speech clipper right in front of the deviation control. So just by increasing the audio going into that circuit, which means you're going to be hitting the clipper harder and making square waves and kind of a distorted sounding audio, that's less than ideal, if you know what I mean. Anybody with any further words on this? Glad you brought this to our attention, Joe. And I guess we got to do a little more listening on this one. Anybody with any further words, give me your call letters right now. K2LIW and the TechNet. Okay. I guess we got to look into this one further, Joe. Back to you, Joe, for any final words. And that's too bad. You had reason to believe last week that the BF-F8+ was going to be wider. I guess when you took a more careful listen, you found out it's kind of narrow and kind of low of audio. Back to you for a final on that one, Joe. W2BMP, K2LIW, the TechNet.
Yeah, roger that. I had just gotten it, hadn't really had a chance to test it out, but the reports that I'm getting and what I'm hearing, it doesn't bear out that this BF8 is any wider. So I'll keep looking into it. If anybody finds any information, I'd love to hear some feedback on it. Thanks very much, Dick. Have a good evening. W2BMP, we're going to be clear.
One final comment, Joe. If somebody during the week wants to write to you, and they go to W2BMP@QIZ.com, is your email address there so they can easily get to you? Back to you, Joe.
Hey, TJ.
Joe first, and then Eric in that order. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, you can always reach me at W2BMP@Yahoo.com. That's my email, and I welcome any information you can give me on this. Thank you very much.
Good information, Joe. Go ahead, Eric.
I picked up UV5RA at Brayton, so that's fairly recent. I just measured it. It makes about 4.75 kilohertz worth of deviation, so it's wide enough.
What you're telling me, Eric, is the UV5-R that you bought at Dayton was wide enough. I own two of them. By my standards, they're half the width that they should be, and I'm not alone. So I wonder if the one that you bought was more than a year old, you bought it used, or did you buy it brand new? And maybe the ones at Dayton were carefully selected by the Baufon company to have the wider deviation. But the majority of guys that are buying them through eBay or Amazon, I'm not sure how they're getting them, but I think it's Amazon. The majority of those people seem to be complaining about being too narrow. Back to you, Eric, for some words on this. KE2EJ, how new is that one you bought? K2LIW in the TechNet.
No, this is brand new at Dayton, so, you know, that's only a couple months ago, and it was $35, so... I just measured it right now because I never did measure it before, so I thought I was just curious after listening to that.
Good information.
And 2HF put a comment.
Lou recognized, going to get to you in a second, Lou, and you just measured it on your service monitor, if I understand you, Eric. Eric, if this is the best of all worlds, what do you believe is the ideal amount of deviation of an FM rig being used by a ham radio operator through a repeater like this one? I'm guessing that around 5.5 kilohertz of RMS deviation might be ideal. So is there a little bit of confusion here for RMS versus peak deviation? And you might want to give me some words on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Well, depends on the repeater. Like the repeater we're using now, if you peak at 5, you're going out of the bandpass. If you peak at 4.75, that's perfect. So your average deviation should be about 3.5 in that neighborhood.
Okay, and let me be sure now that I'm hearing the right thing, Eric. When you talk about 4.75 as being the most ideal deviation for this repeater, I now want to know the units of that deviation. Is that peak deviation or RMS deviation? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I shall repeat what I said. I said that 4.75 peak maximum, no bigger, is ideal. It would give you an average around 3.5. Good RMS value for this particular repeater. If you want to stay in the same within the filter of the RF for this repeater.
Okay, 4.75. Peak deviation, you said it now twice, I'm going to believe you. That would be 9.6 kilohertz peak to peak. That implies that the IF strip is in the vicinity of 10 kilohertz wide. Rough approximations on my part. See what Lou's going to say on this. NY2H, K2RIW. Go ahead, Lou.
I'm sorry, Dick, but it's not Lou, it's Dennis, and it's NY2HF.
Lou, Dennis, I keep doing that, and I'm sorry. The way you say it sometimes, your voice sounds very much like Lou to me. Maybe I've got tin hearing. So NY2 Hotel Foxtrot, out there in the North Fork. Go ahead, Dennis, tell us whatever you know on this subject. Sorry about that.
Actually, Dick, I'm going to go back to the Baofeng the UV3. I bought one for my wife, and I bought it on Radio Oddity. It was a lot less than what you stated, and it was also a complete kit with just about everything you need. I haven't used it, so I don't know whether it's a commercial now band or not. Maybe I can report next week for the net.
Yeah, if you had the right adapter, which is that SMA to a BNC adapter, which you can buy from some of the same suppliers where you buy the Baofeng itself, which allows you to connect it to a cable, therefore you could connect it to your outside antenna and really feed us an RF signal on either 450 or 2 meters. That would be fun to listen to if that was possible, Dennis. So we'll eventually get to the bottom of this one. I know that Dave, into APG, who bought his UV3, I think approximately a year ago, he's very happy with it. He sounds good. It's got full deviation. More to follow on that subject. Tony's the next guy up at bat. KC2, Whiskey, Bravo, Delta. You've got it, Tony. K2LIW, the tech man.
Dick, all those adapters are available at Radio Shack.
Glad to hear that. And you're sure it's the right sex of the SMA? I think it's a reverse polarity. No, it's not a reverse polarity SMA. I think it requires an antenna that's female instead of male. Is that true, Barry? Go ahead.
Yes, that is true. They have it all in Radio Shack. I bought it for Richie in 2EO. He's got the same radio, and I had no trouble finding them. They even had a few varieties of it, so it takes your choice when you get there. They got a lot of them. You got to open up those drawers in the back of the store. They're in there.
Good sounding. Now, Richie, into HH, into EO. He is using which one of those radios, Barry? Which radio is he using, and are you happy with the amount of deviation he's got? N2 Moonbounce, K2LIW.
Okay, well, I don't remember which one he was using. Not using it anymore, because when he moved from one nursing home to the other, the radio came up missing. We have no longer found the radio or the antenna. So now he's using an old Yaesu. And I guess he must be asleep tonight, because he was really planning on being in his tech net. So he doesn't have the radio anymore, as far as we know. Over.
Yeah, a little bit disappointing to hear that. Maybe the good news, Barry, is that various other residents of his first nursing home saw all the fun he is having talking to all his buddies on ham radio. And they said, boy, I got to have one of those. Under normal circumstances, when a ham radio operator loses his radio, it gets stolen from him. That's usually bad news. When it comes to something like a $38 Baofeng, if somebody steals that from you and he becomes a ham because of it, and a year later he apologizes and pays you for it and says, boy, am I glad I became a ham. So maybe it's a very left-handed way of doing some evangelizing here, Barry. What do you think? N2 Moonbound,
K2LIW. Yeah, well, knowing what I know about the last nursing home he was in, I really doubt that. The one he's in now, that it's actually possible. The people there are quite lucid, very friendly, and waiting to leave. Most of them are there for only a couple of weeks. And they could do something like that, but not the place he was at before. I don't think those people in the other place even knew he had a radio.
Understand. And I think the value of the antenna he was using, I think it was a stripped piece of coax cable as a kind of a monopole antenna hanging from the ceiling. So it was an inexpensive antenna, inexpensive radio, and that loss is no great big loss for a man of his resources or your resources. Let's hope that turns into good news. Tony, KC2, Whiskey, Bravo, Delta. Go right ahead, Tony. K2LIW in the tech net.
Good evening, K2LIW and everybody else on the net. Like I said, I'm a first time on the line mark here. Finding everything interesting over here. My question is, recently I bought a black box UHF radio, 430 to 480 meg. And the unit I'm operating on right now is an ICOM ICV-8000. I can't seem to get this thing unlocked after 148.000. I'd like to use this thing for work, too. And is there any other way I could do this without the software?
Okay, so you have reason to believe that your ICOM, if I understand, Victor 8000, I think you told us is the model number, that it supposedly works 430 to 480, and you can't get it to work above 148.000. Anybody with any comments on that? Anybody with any knowledge on that particular ICOM radio? Give us your call letters right now. KQLIW in the TechNet.
KQLIW. No, I was just letting you know the background. I have, I'm using two separate radios. I have a UHF and a VHF. The VHF I'm using right now is the V8000. It's, I can transmit from 146 to 148. Anything after that, it will not transmit. It shows me off on the screen. I'd like to use this for the 161 megahertz for my work.
Okay. You're going to have to tell us the model number of the radio that you can't get. It goes from 146 to 148. First of all, who told you that it will go to 161? It's question number one. But the real question is, what's the model number? For somebody to tell you how to unlock it, they have to at least know whose radio and what model number. Back to you, Joe. Correction, Tony, K2LIW.
Did you be able to comment also, Dick?
It's going to be the ICV-8000. When I bought this new, I forgot what where I got it off of on the website. It was guaranteed to work from 136 to 174 on all bands. But when I powered it up and I got everything up and running, it's only keying up from 146 to 148. Well, like I said, it's the ICOM ICV-8000. The radio is only 4 months old.
Okay, we hear you, Tony. Let's see what John's got to say. KC2WGV, KQRIW. Go ahead, John.
KC2WGV. Dick, I have the exact model that he's speaking about, and as far as I know, it's only up to 148. You may be able to monitor. He may have to unlock the monitor, but I have never gone to that frequency. It just works at 2 meters on the ham band. I've never used it anywhere else.
KB2IQN with a comment.
KB2IQN. K2LIW. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, for the station with the ICOM V8000, there is a modification that's possible to remove a diode to allow transmitting beyond 148 megahertz. Technically, you're not supposed to do this, of course, but if you look up ICOM V8000 mods, those three words, you can find the modification to do this. Back to net.
Comment.
Okay, we're going to pick up Vito in a second. Chris, did you find that information by Googling the word ICOM V8000? By what means did you find the modification? KB2IQN? K2LIW?
First of all, I don't use Google for kind of privacy reasons. I use DuckDuckGo as the search engine I typically use. And I put in the words ICOM, V8000, mods, those three words. And then a web page, like the second or first or second web page came up showing a modification to remove one diode, which then allows transmitting beyond the ham band.
Comment. Very good information. Okay. The person who said comment twice, your voice sounds like Vito, but whoever it is, please give us your call letters and name, and then proceed with your comment. KQRIW, my name is Dick.
SW82BJF, Vito Bayshore. I said twice, that all of these transceivers, including mine, both of my Yaesus, have the capabilities of receiving, of hearing outside the bands from 143, whatever it may be, up to 149, even up to 150. Some go even further than that. I've seen some go as high as 160, I think. but receiving only, they stop at the edge of the band. Of course, the gentleman who made comments about modifications, that is correct. And also, if you're a member of Civil Air Patrol, usually operate down 143 megacycles, if I'm correct or not, then they can be modified to be used for that purpose. Otherwise, it's receiving only. Go ahead.
35, Vito. Many rigs are like that, where they'll receive from DC to light, but by way of a diode O-ring circuit, a diode logic circuit, many of those frequencies are locked out until you remove a diode. So that modification quite possibly tells you if you remove this diode, it will now be able to transmit on these other frequencies. So I think somewhere out there, there is a modification procedure that is published, so to speak, on the internet, Tony, and I think with a little bit of searching, you're going to find it. Whiskey, here we go. Kilo Charlie 2, Whiskey Bravo Delta, for any final, K2RIW. Let us know how that turns out, Tony. Back to you, Tony.
I appreciate the help out there. That website was going to be ICOM V8000, the number 5 or the word 5?
But I think
negative. That's ICOM Victor 8000 mods. Let's see. Mods is Mike Oscar Delta Sierra.
Gotcha. Mods. Okay. I got a lot of QRM coming in over here. Sounds like Sergeant or something underneath you guys. But all right. I appreciate the help. I'm going to be listening in, and I'm enjoying the net so far. Thank you guys for your time.
Yeah, please come back, Tony, when you finally find that and employ it and let us know how it worked out. Because for all we know, there are other people in your circumstance that would like to be able to use the rig for commercial purposes. And as long as the right kind of licensing takes place, no problem. And we amateurs tend to be pretty straight arrows and only transmit on the frequencies we're allowed to, if you know what I mean. Yes, a devious person could take many of these inexpensive transceivers that we can get our hands on and force them to transmit on frequencies where we shouldn't be. But I'd like to believe that hams don't do that unless they've got the proper authorization. The next person on our list was Joe, K2 Mike Victor Romeo. What would you like to talk about tonight, Joe? K2LIW in the tech net.
K2IW, K2MVR. Thank you. Good evening to everybody in the net. My question is about the power going into an antenna without an automatic antenna tuner versus with the automatic antenna tuner. Recently I did I bought a QRP watt meter and I used it with my Alex Loop magnetic loop antenna, and let's say 5 watts was coming out of the radio according to the readout on the radio, and after tuning the antenna I measured 5 watts with the QRP meter. If I use the antenna tuner with the end-fed matchbox antenna from the emergency radio service from Hawaii, I ordered that antenna recently, and I tuned the antenna with the antenna tuner, I do not get the wattage, the reading that the radio says it's outputting. And I'm sure I'm losing it in the antenna tuner somehow, but I just wanted maybe some clarification on that. If the antenna tuner does take away the wattage that is put to the antenna.
Very fine, Joe, or Jose, from the Bronx, who's got, by the way, a very nice presentation on QRZ.com. Pictures of him, looks like a satellite receiving system, and quite a bit of other information. Very well done, Joe. I'm glad you asked that question here as opposed to on 20 meters, because on 20 meters, so to speak, there are a significant number of people who believe that all power reflected from an antenna, because the antenna is less than a perfect load, they believe
that the antenna tuner just eats up that power and throws it away. Absolutely not. Any self-respecting antenna tuner of any reasonable design integrity wastes no power, has an insertion loss that's so darn small that it's usually insignificant. So does it waste power and eat it up? Absolutely not. Let me drop. However, let me give you a guess as to what could take place. Some transmitters have a relative output power meter on the front panel where you can, if it was a rig that has a built-in Pi network, for instance, and modern-day rigs don't, but if it had a Pi network, you could adjust the tuning and loading control and maximize that apparent output indication. In some cases, that power output indicator is a simple voltage rectifier circuit. It just simply looks at peak voltage. Well, if your particular antenna, with its particular visor and your particular length of cable, happen to present a higher impedance back of the transmitter. Let's assume now, worst case, it's a 2-to-1 visor, and therefore your transmitter is seeing 100-ohm load instead of a 50-ohm load. Under normal circumstances, the transmitter will develop more voltage into a 100-ohm load. Therefore, the simple peak voltage diode rectifying circuit relative power output indicator will give you a bigger output indication when it sees 100 ohms. You now put in the antenna tuner so that the rig is now seeing 50 ohms. Not only will the rig give you higher fidelity if it's running in the sideband mode, for instance, and be happier, but the voltage it generates into a 50 ohm load will be lower than the voltage it generates into a 100 ohm load. Let me drop. Therefore, that relative output indicator will indicate a smaller amount of voltage, and it would be very easy to misinterpret that as less power output. So if you were measuring the power output with a Bird wattmeter, and you measured forward and reverse power and gave me those readings, I would have a lot more faith in what you think is a change in power output. But as I said, for simplicity reasons, for inexpensive reasons, many rigs have this simple relative voltage indicator, which could give you this confusing result. That's a guess on my part as to what could be happening. Guarantee there's some other things that could be happening, Joe. K2MVR, maybe you can give us some more details of how you made the power measurement. K2RIW in the TechNet. You've got it, Joe.
Yes, sir. Well, it was a basic... basic test. I use a KX3, and so the antenna tuner is built in. It's an option which I purchased, so it's built in. So when I have the Oaks Hills Research WM2 QRP watt meter, so I have that right after the radio, and then the antenna. So like I said, if I tune my Alex loop, for the lowest SWR, and I set the radio at 5 watts, and when I transmit a CW tone, I see the 5 watts on the QRP meter. Now, if I disconnect the Alex loop and I use the NFED matchbox wire antenna, I then engage the automatic antenna tuner to tune it. And I guess that's where I get confused, because if I set the radio at 5 watts, the meter does not show me 5 watts. I'm talking about the external watt meter. So I'm thinking maybe because it's 9-to-1 unbalanced to unbalanced coil in that matchbox. Doing something. I'm really not sure what's going on. That's why I'm asking. I just want to make sure that the amount of power I'm putting in, at least most of it is coming out on the other side with the matchbox antenna. I have no problem with the Alex loop antenna. And that's basically the question. So I apologize if I'm not very thorough on my tests here. But
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
We only lost about the last 5 seconds due to a timeout there, Joe, so don't worry. Yeah, it looks like there's more than one thing going on here. With and without the built-in automatic antenna tuner is one of the variables. Another variable is two separate antennas, the Alex Loop and the NFED antenna. And in many cases, an NFED antenna could have an extremely high standing wave ratio, in which case, whether or not the automatic antenna tuner is able to find the proper match for that antenna, it's something to worry about a little bit. If you can have somebody listen to you on the air and report how strong your signal seems to be when you flip from one antenna to the other, would give you a partial indication. But you got to be careful on that one, because are the two antennas radiating from the same location? Probably not. The same altitude? Maybe not. The same polarization, one being horizontal and the other being vertical, or one person being off the end of the NFED antenna and the other person being broadside to the Alex Loop. There's a lot of variables going on here. I recommend you just keep making measurements, try various combinations. We'll eventually get to the bottom of this. If some friend of yours had although you did say you got a QRP watt meter. I was about to say, if you used a bird, well, you already own a QRP watt meter, assuming it's telling the truth. Does that QRP watt meter have a forward and reverse mode, Joe? When you're looking at your Alex Loop, and you look at 4 watts forward, how much is apparently reversed on the QRP watt meter, and the same thing with the NFED antenna. That would be another clue. Back to you, Joe. K2 Mike Victor Romeo, K2 LAW in the TechNet.
Yes, Richard, it does have a forward and reverse setting and reading. And I will perform the test again and do some more experimentation. I guess that's the fun part about this. One thing I do know is these two antennas are working. I just contacted Cuba today with the NFED, which was amazing to me. This hobby never ceases to amaze me. So I'll just keep on experimenting with that, and I'll take those measurements with a forward and reverse on both antennas, and I'll take it from there. I'll keep you guys updated if possible. Thank you very much, K2RIW, that you've answered my question. Thank you so much. And good evening to everybody in the net. K2MVR.
In my opinion, Joe, we didn't give you a complete answer. We gave you some more information, and yes, this is the fun part, the experimenting, in which you try to find out what's really happening. Congratulations on talking to Cuba with 5 watts. And so how can such a small amount of power, and from Bronx to Cuba, I'm guessing is a healthy 1,500 miles, so how can 5 watts, which you could have been running on flashlight batteries in theory, how can it talk that distance? Out of curiosity, Joe, what band did you do that on? For instance, was that 20 meters? Well done. K2MVR, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes, it was 20 meters a little bit earlier this evening. 20 meters.
Well done. And I'm glad to hear that there are operating amateurs in Cuba. And I bet they really enjoy talking to you. They probably would even enjoy visiting you. Look out. As you get friendly with those guys, eventually they're going to become visiting you, Joe. I've had that happen a few times. I think we've gone down the list of everybody who signed in at first. If I skipped over you, let me know. K2RIW listening.
Hey, it's here, Jeff.
Go right ahead, Eric.
I want to throw an idea at you. Let's take a... you got a minute for this?
Well, there's a small fee involved, but I'll make some time for you, Eric. I'm having some fun with him. K2EJ, K2LZW, go ahead.
My fee's larger.
I'll give him cut rate.
All right. Well, I had an idea, and I'm just curious about it. Let's take a low-frequency sine wave, and let's make a mathematical function out of it. It's basically going to be the cosine of X.
talking about doing is creating a database of secant lines to actually, if we define the limits and use a derivative.